Hi, everyone. I'm Chris.
And I'm Alice.
And you're listening to Xena Made Me Gay.
Hey, hey.
Welcome, everyone.
In the times of brick phones, Tamagotchis, and curtain bangs, the 90s kids cried out for a badass. She was Xena, the warrior princess. The kicks, the moves, the nostalgia, the queerness. Xena made us gay.
So today we're going to be talking about episode 20 of season 1, called Ties That Bind. And I thought this was a good opportunity for us to talk about the ties that bind us two.
Nicely done.
Yes, thank you. Because the episode covers generally the topic of blood family versus chosen family and whether one can be stronger than the other and how so. And yeah, I think this would be a good opportunity to talk about
ourselves.
You know, it's finally we found a reason to do that. I know we had a whole special episode where we told y'all a little bit about who we are and why you should care. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we went that much into specifically our relationship and like why we're even doing this together.
That's true. That's true.
So yeah, thought maybe we could talk about that.
I'm very lucky in that respect, in terms of I have both chosen family and blood family that I have wonderful relationships with. Aww. And I think not a lot of people, sadly, can say that because, yeah, I'm best friends with my mom. I have the best mom in the world. I have an awesome uncle who has been like a father figure throughout my life. And he happens to be Chris's dad. And that's how we're related. So my mom and Chris's dad are siblings.
Yeah.
And also best friends, actually, which is interesting.
Yes, which also does not necessarily happen. And it definitely does not necessarily happen for cousins.
Yes.
But I would say that we're, you know, in best friends territory, you and I.
Yes, definitely. And that is a very interesting thing to describe, because whenever I talk about Chris, who lives in Berlin, and like I mention Chris a lot in conversations with my friends, and they're like, well, Chris is your cousin, right? And I'm like, yes, Chris is my cousin, but they're more my friend than my cousin, because I think that there is a difference between wanting to hang out with your siblings or like your close family. And that is a very good thing. I'm not knocking it, but still, it's a different thing to wanting to hang out with your best friend and like with your friend who's like very, very close circle. So yeah, I describe Chris as more my friend than my cousin.
Yeah, I think in order to bypass this, wait, why are you hanging out with your cousin so much? I just say sister a lot when I'm describing you. And then people are confused when I talk about my mom, for example, and they're like, oh, but how is it for Alice? Like, how is Alice's relationship with the mom? And I'm like, oh, no, that's only my mom. He has a different mom. which can also happen for half siblings. But that's usually the point when I need to explain that actually the sister is kind of a shortcut to explain the closeness kind of associated with that type of a blood relation. And it's funny because I remember when we were little, our shared grandma was very disturbed by the fact that I would always insist on saying that we were cousins and not sisters.
Yes, because Chris has a thing about doing things correctly.
Yeah, I like to be precise. I like to be correct. And, you know, it just, it's a fact that we are not sisters. Yes. Just, you know, if we look at boring
dictionary
scientific facts, you know. and that's all it was for me. Like, I wasn't doing it as a dig or as a way to be like, I hate you. I did other things for that.
sure. I think it's fair to mention right now that Chris is 7 years younger than me, which, yes, it doesn't matter as much now, but it sure mattered when Chris was a little goblin and I was a teen or a preteen who had to behave well towards the little one.
Yeah. And I sure tested you in that respect. Yeah. But at some point, I think our relationship, what's the word? Transformed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think at one point our relationship transformed from that. So kind of, you as the not really caregiver, but, you know, the more adult one, mm-hmm, being annoyed by by the little one, to, yeah, this relationship of equals. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when we stopped being primarily cousins and started being, mm-hmm, primarily friends.
Definitely. I think it happened pretty early. Like, I remember around the time when you were 14, already I could feel that I could talk to you absolutely as an equal, but also because I think you're an old soul in that regard, as they say. But also, I think a funny thing is that, of course, it's not a prerequisite for a friendship, like the similarities in certain aspects, but I would say that the fact that we're both queer really affects our personalities, and we kind of got to that all on our own without consulting each other.
Because
Chris is younger, I had questions asked of me of like, oh, so did you influence Chris in any kind of way about being queer? They're like, no, it was more like the other way around.
Yeah. But I think that was one area where we found that we really connected, mm-hmm, and that was a very fertile common ground to build a more interesting and deeper relationship on than just being related. So yeah, it was a cool journey from primarily blood family to primarily chosen family for us. And with that said, let's move on to the episode
and explore Zina's and Gabrielle's blood family versus chosen family paths.
So we open with the villain of the episode walking around his camp and examining the slave women that he just captured. And the first thing that I noticed about this villain is his really intense, dark under eye circles. Like,
yeah,
it looks like he hasn't slept for days.
He's been rugged in general.
Like, he's been running an underground network of fight clubs across the country.
Yeah, he looks rough. Also, it's established that he's a hateable villain because one of the first things he says, he's like, we'll have fun with those later, looking at the slave women. Mm. And he also adds that some of them were more cooperative than others, like looking at one particular slave girl, which I think is going to be important for the further plot.
So the villain walks into his tent and then Ares shows up out of thin air, like he often does. And the villain is just super jazzed to see Ares and recognizes him immediately. So it seems like, unlike Xena, they've had face-to-face interactions.
I would say so, because in this episode, he appears like what seems like 10 times to just casually chat with this villain. So,
aww. Ares is feeling lonely.
Yeah.
I mean, which, like, the whole episode is about that in a way.
Basically, yeah.
But yeah, that kind of undercuts, again, this weird way that they decided to introduce Ares as, like, someone who's been influential in Xena's life, and yet they never saw each other. Anyway, I don't know whether this was the case before, but this time I noticed that Ares is wearing this really cute dangly cross earring. It looks great on him, but it seems like yet another sign that Christianity is catching on.
Ares is like, oh, do you like my new cool fashion? And other gods are like, do you know what that means? He's like, no, it's just cute.
yeah. Like people who wear band t-shirts, even though they've never listened to those bands. name one album by Jesus. Anyway, unfortunately for the villain, Ares informs him that he's found a replacement for him. Mm-hmm. The villain is dismayed, and he tries to understand whether he's done something wrong, like maybe not enough sacrifices. And Ares is like, oh, no, you've been great about the sacrifice thing.
Sacrifice thing.
I just love how casual it is. Oh, yeah, the sacrifice thing. Great job on that. Yeah, all cool. And Ares says that it's actually a question of desire, a fire in the eyes, and the villain just doesn't have it. So yeah, maybe those dark under-eye circles are indeed the reason for the villain's demise. You know, there's no fire in the eyes. The eyes look puffy and tired. So this is a lesson for us all. Get enough sleep and moisturize, kids.
Oh God. Looking at my eyes in the camera right now.
Yeah. Y'all should be happy that this is a podcast. But also, I now think that this is kind of a roundabout way for Ares to tell the villain that he doesn't want to fuck him, and therefore...
Definitely. That is the reason.
He wants someone else to lead the army.
Yeah.
Anyway, the villain says that no man would be able to do a better job. And we get this classic thing of like, but it's a woman. And the villain immediately knows that it's Xena.
Because everybody knows that Ares wants to fuck Xena at this point. Yeah, but this whole scene actually proves my point about gods basically being some sort of agents for mortals. And Ares exclusively represents warlords with armies who go around randomly killing people. That's his thing. That's his type of talent. So he tells his latest hire basically that he just doesn't have it, you know.
We then cut to Gabriel and Xena sitting in the tree, but not K-I-S-S-I-N-G, unfortunately.
Wah-wah.
And they're overlooking the camp and... discussing the plan to save the slave women. Then they spot some dude approaching the camp, seemingly with the intention to fight the baddies. And Xena is confused, but says that the guy would just get himself killed. So she jumps off the tree to go help. We then see that the guy is actually on the older side, in his 60s, maybe early 60s. Mm-hmm. He starts fighting a couple of baddies, but he's not very successful. So Xena does indeed need to save him. And she knocks out the baddies and takes the guy away into the woods. And he's also wounded from the fight.
Yeah, I just wanted to note here that Xena knocks out one of the baddies by kicking him in the crotch. And that's such a satisfying scene.
Misandry alert.
I mean... judging by the podcast that you're listening to, you're okay with that.
Fair enough. So in the woods, Xena chastises the guy for either being suicidal or stupid. And Gabrielle then comes down from the tree calling Xena's name. And the guy's face changes when he hears it. And Xena's like, do I know you? And the guy's like, you should. I'm your father.
Da, da, da.
Yeah. And Xena's having none of it. She tells the guy maybe he's been hit in the head, tells him to take care, and leaves. Gabrielle seems to be having a little bit more doubts, so she asks Xena whether it's possible that he's Xena's father, but Xena completely brushes that off.
Yeah, this I'm your father bit obviously is a quote, of course, but I wanted to note that the guy's face changes like very quickly when he realizes that it's Xena who's helping him and potentially Xena is his daughter. It's like, oh shit, oh wow, oh, oh cool. And it's like a kaleidoscope of emotions, but it's very badly acted by the actor or by the character. Don't know yet.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good point that the acting is bad, but because it's Xena, we don't know whether the acting is intentionally bad. So Xena then decides to go ahead and free the slave women, and she fights the guards while Gabrielle somehow opens the lock with the blade of a knife. Like, is that even possible? I don't, that doesn't seem like it should be possible. Just like jam the tip of a knife into a lock, like that shouldn't work.
I mean, trying to remember how locks work. Yeah, like you would need something longer for that. But maybe she just...
And you need like two things.
Yeah, yeah. But maybe she has just been hanging out with Autolycus and he showed her his skill of opening a lock with a knife.
Okay, yeah. So Gabrielle tells the women where to go, but one of them runs in the opposite direction for some reason. So Gabrielle goes after her. And once Xena is done fighting, she goes after Gabrielle to like make sure that she's okay. We then see that there is another baddie where Gabrielle and the woman who doesn't understand directions are. And they don't have any weapons, so for a moment it's a scary situation. But then the guy who claims to be Xena's dad appears and fights off the baddie. So Xena arrives just in time to see that happen. But again, she just turns around and leaves. And the guy tries to convince her not to leave, but no success.
Yeah, yeah, he even tries this daddy talk of like, don't you walk away from me. But that seems to work on Gabrielle more than Xena. And also, again, it's badly acted.
Interesting. Yeah, now I'm intrigued. I mean, if it's just plain bad acting by the actor, it's kind of still works, you know?
Yeah, I mean, whatever works.
Yeah. But also, it totally makes sense that that would work on Gabrielle more than on Xena.
Definitely, yeah.
So back in his tent, the villain is making plans for stopping Xena. And as you said, Ares appears again because poor dude is very lonely. And he taunts the villain. The villain says that he'll never take orders from Xena, but Ares reassures him and says, oh, he won't have to. He'll be dead.
I guess that's a joke that's funny only to Ares, but I want to discuss...
I kind of liked it.
Yeah. Douchey Ares's jokes.
Yeah, I don't know. It was cute.
But anyway, I wanted to discuss how Ares appears. He appears already lying down. It's on some sort of bench that looks suspiciously like a fainting couch. So yeah, that's quite an entrance. I would be inclined to kind of suspect that they're having sex with the villain, but on the other hand, the villain looks so rugged and is so dirty and is so
like unattractive. Not rugged as in like...
Not in a good way.
Outdoorsy type.
No. He's an outdoorsy type in a sense that he has been sleeping in the mud, that sort of thing. So I doubt that Ares has the hots for him. Although that also is remained to be seen. Like, I'm focusing on a male gay line in this episode.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, I could imagine, like, a cheeky little blowjob happening at some point there.
With Eris being the receiving side,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, duh. So the villain goes to the woods where his sidekick is hanging out and entertaining himself by throwing darts at monarch butterflies because he is super duper evil.
Or just collecting butterflies, one of the two?
I don't know. It's like, it struck me as one of those like cartoonishly violent and evil guy, like he even hates butterflies.
Yeah. I wanted to destroy something beautiful, sort of thing, right?
Yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm. And the villain is like, "Go kill Xena," and the psychic is like, "Okay, cool."
Yeah, the psychic is unhinged. Like, he has this absolutely crazy twinkle in his eyes, and I think that, by the way, they show him. He seems to be an assassin, and I guess all assassins have this crazy twinkle in their eyes. It's not the first time we're seeing it. But what I wanted to focus on, again, coming back to the gay line, is that I have to entertain myself, like, one way or another in this episode. It's pretty boring.
Okay.
The review is going to be good. The episode itself remains to be seen. So the villain grabs the sidekick's beard as he gives him the assignment. So, and it's like, it's this gesture that maybe leads me to believe that after giving Eris some head, he goes and like makes out with his sidekick or something.
I mean, I'm kind of loving this headcanon that you're coming up with for this gay little baddie band. Why not? So at that point, we cut back to Xena and Gabrielle, and they're hanging out with the liberated women, and it kind of gives Mad Max Fury Road a bit.
Yep.
Gabrielle comes up to the woman who doesn't understand directions, and she tells her to get some rest, but the woman seems distraught, and not just because she just nearly escaped rape. The woman apologizes for putting Gabrielle in danger during the escape. All of that aside, though, I gotta mention the woman's top.
Yeah.
It's quite striking. It's this Y2K harnessy, corsety, red gold strappy bra situation. I'm so into it. Like, I want one.
Yeah, the woman herself is quite striking. She's very beautiful. Mm. I don't think we see this actress again, but yeah, I think she's one of the most beautiful extras.
No, it doesn't seem like she's been in much.
I mean, maybe she was like, fuck acting. I'm gonna become a lawyer.
So her character, who introduces herself as Rhea, mm-hmm. says that she doesn't want to go back home because of the shame. And she also mentions that she wasn't kidnapped. She volunteered. Mm-hmm. And we don't get an explanation, but we assume it's coming later.
I think we can kind of read between the lines with the standard victim blaming and also victims blaming themselves. I kind of actually like how it's done here because it's very reserved. Not a lot of emotions, but we can understand what may have happened.
Right. Then we see Xena and Gabrielle sitting on a hill and watching the liberated woman splash in a river, extremely heterosexually.
Yeah, Xena even asks, are they almost done? As if the splashing has been going on for quite some while. And also before, when Xena was sitting there and when we saw her, she was humming one of the show's music themes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's nice to hear Xena/Lucy sing, and it's cool that it's not a random song, but it's this basically this theme that we hear a lot of the times when some significant sad things are happening usually.
Yeah. So Gabrielle and Zina start chatting, and Gabrielle says that it must have been hard for Zina to grow up without a father.
Which is funny of her to ask, since she herself is like a parentless Disney princess in that regard.
Well, Gabrielle has a father but no mother, it seems like.
Yes, but we see her father in the very first episode, and then yes. When she comes back home, she has no parents.
Yeah,
only
yeah.
her sister. So I don't know.
It is weird. But Zina says that it was fine because he left when she was very little, and the only thing she really remembers is riding horses with him, and it does seem like that's a very fond memory.
Mm-hmm.
But that moment of reminiscence is interrupted by someone shouting "Zina," and a mm-hmm. bunch of people riding on horses kind of come towards the liberated women who scatter. Mm-hmm. We then see that it's Zina's alleged father riding away from a couple of guys, and Zina jumps onto Argo and follows them. They're kind of shouting at each other, and we hear from that shouting that the reason the guys are following the alleged father is that he stole their horse. So they try to kill him, but Zina uses her chakram to disarm them. You know, the typical chakram who goes around and does his own thing type of deal.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not going to even say its thing because I decided the chakram is a boy. I don't know why. So when the fight is over, the alleged father tells Zina that he actually didn't steal the horse, but rather that he won a bet some time ago that the horse was owed to him. Zina says that she'll try to check the story, and the guy gets really angry because she doesn't trust him.
Yeah. It's like,
dude, I just met you. What the hell?
Yeah, he, like, Zina's dad really seems like a gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. Like,
every time he appears, there's trouble. Mm-hmm. And yeah, also, he reveals that there is some kind of complex family history there because he's like, "You're so stubborn. You're just like your mother. Why can't you trust me?" And like, if Zina's mom did not trust you, I guess there was a reason. And at that point, there's a missed opportunity of Zina kind of questioning him and maybe asking, like, "So, what's my mother's name? When's her birthday? What was my ancient Greek teddy bear's name?" But yeah, Zina focuses on the horse story.
Yeah, for some reason, this is like a very horse-heavy conversation. Like, there's this potentially stolen horse. But also, the dude then asks her whether she remembers how they used to ride horses together. And I think this is the first time that we see some serious doubt creep into Zina's mind. Like, maybe he is the father. But at the same time, it's not like riding horses is such an outrageously rare activity. Like,
especially at that time.
Yeah, it's not like they used to juggle carrots together or something really distinctive like that, you know? But either way, Zina goes to check the alleged father's story, and it does check out. So one of the guys that was chasing him does confirm that they owed him a horse. And she reacts to that in a way that, again, like, makes it seem more significant than it really is. All she found out was that the guy didn't lie about one thing. That says nothing about whether he lied about other things.
Yeah, yeah. I guess in a way that it's acted by Lucy, there's a little expression of guilt, like, "Oh, maybe I shouldn't have doubted him." I don't know.
Yeah, but why not? Why not doubt some random dude who claims to be your father? Like, that sounds very reasonable. But interestingly enough, in the next scene, Zina catches up with Gabrielle and tells her that the guy indeed did not steal the horse, and that's all that she knows. Like, she seemingly is still kind of aware that, okay, this doesn't mean anything. But yeah, as I said, Lucy Lawless's acting in the previous scene suggests that Xena is having more significant doubts at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also love how in this very scene, Xena's supposed father proudly rides his horse that he now obtained, while ex-slave girls follow him on foot, and he's like, so like, oh yeah, I'm the man. Not very gallant, I would say, but okay, whatever.
Yeah. So Gabrielle then goes to talk to Rhea a bit more, and Rhea says that she won't actually go into her town at all, and asks Gabrielle to tell her younger sister that she had no choice. And Gabrielle immediately understands that what happened was that Rhea volunteered in order to prevent her sister from being taken instead. And actually, like, that didn't occur to me. Like, I was surprised by how quickly Gabrielle jumped to that conclusion.
Interesting. No, I think that was also a thing that I thought of when I heard the story, because I also didn't remember what was the deal with Rhea. I didn't remember this character at all. But I think that because of Hunger Games, it's kind of like a trope at this point. Like, yeah. It wasn't in Xena's time, but now it is.
True. Anyway, Gabrielle tells Rhea to be a girl boss and return home to prove to the villain that she's not gonna let him ruin her life.
Yeah, good reasoning indeed. Also, it's very ambiguous how Rhea acts, and I don't understand whether she has been assaulted already or not, because I want to believe that not, but by the way she behaves and by something that is going to be said at the end of the episode, it kind of seems that maybe she has, and then the story gets altogether much darker.
But yeah, this like idea that, oh, you're gonna go back to like go back to your village
and be happy.
I thought it was kind of silly that Gabrielle was like, you need to go back to your village and like live your girl boss life, and that will like prove something to the dude that maybe has raped you, even though like he doesn't care, like he's never gonna know even.
And like, you shouldn't care about him. Yeah. It's a weird way to console someone. Yeah.
Anyways, so Xena then walks with her alleged father, and she hears him hum a song that she also knows.
Yes, and this is such a missed opportunity, and I wonder what happened, because we hear Xena humming a tune which is very recognizable because it's one of the famous musical themes from the show.
Yeah.
And if we'd heard her supposed father hum the same song, it would make so much sense, because we would instantly recognize it. It's associated with Xena in our minds. Mm-hmm. But he hums something completely random. And I don't know, maybe the actor couldn't do it. Like, the melody is quite complex. Maybe he just couldn't do it. But it's such a missed opportunity for a payoff.
It really is. Yeah. And like, I think everything points towards that being the idea, but whatever comes out of his I guess mouth, he hums it so he doesn't open his mouth, but whatever comes out of him is not that song. Which is very disappointing.
It's a letdown.
But he then tells her that he left her and her mother because he was too young and wanted to fuck around. At least that's honest, I guess. He then asks Xena whether she wants to tell him anything about her own life, and she's like, no. And at that point we hear the sound of some like thin object approaching. I think that sound is mostly associated with arrows. And then Xena catches a dart with her bare hand, just one hand. I guess the arrow catching workshop that she attended back in the day at the villain conference also covered darts.
It was very thorough.
Yeah. She then immediately finds the sidekick with the darts. And we see that he wasn't actually throwing them. He was blowing them through a little pipe. And then she blows through the other end of the pipe. And the guy chokes on his own dart.
So improbable in real life. But I loved every second of the scene.
Yeah, it's very cute. And she also knocks him off his feet for good measure. And tells him to go tell his boss that she's not easy to kill. Mm-hmm. And Xena leaves, but then her alleged father appears, fights the sidekick, defeats him, and kills him, even though the sidekick is pleading for mercy. So Gabrielle sees that, is really horrified. Xena arrives, and Gabrielle tells her what happened, but the alleged father, acting like super relaxed, says that it was actually self-defense and that the guy had a dagger. Mm-hmm. Xena flips the psychic over and lo and behold, there is the dagger. Gabrielle is really confused because she was right there and she didn't see any dagger. And Xena says that everyone makes mistakes and leaves. Mm-hmm. The alleged father then walks up to Gabrielle and the little fucking bitch that he is, tells Gabrielle not to worry because he's going to leave soon and not come between Xena and Gabrielle. Mm-hmm. And Gabrielle's like, you won't come between us? Like you're literally Xena's father? Like, what's the problem here? And he's like, oh, no, no. As long as you two are together, there's no place for me. What a piece of shit!
Ah! That's true.
Yeah, and then Rhea Ex Machina appears, and Gabrielle is like, hey, Rhea, so you loved your sister, but then you left her so that she can be happy? That was the right thing to do!
And those two situations are completely similar!
What?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. And it's so sad to see Gabby fall for such a petty little manipulation.
Yeah.
And I don't know. The only thing that I could explain it with is that Gabrielle is not very confident in their relationship as of now. She kind of feels that there's something wrong with it. I don't know, maybe some inner homophobia or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, she should have just told the old man to sit down and drink his pills. It's really sad.
Oh. So, yeah, Gabrielle comes up to Xena and tells her that she's going to take the liberated women back to their town. And Xena and the alleged father can stay behind in case the villain goes after them. And Xena is immediately suspicious and asks Gabrielle what's wrong. Mm-hmm. And Gabrielle laughs and says, nothing! In the most clearly something is wrong way imaginable. But for some reason, Xena just doesn't press further, and Gabrielle leaves, clearly with the intention never to see Xena again.
Yeah, we understand that from her facial expression and from the music that, yeah, it seems that she wants to say goodbye to Xena forever, which is a major overreaction, but oh well.
Yeah, it's so weird and sudden. Mm. But yeah, sometime later when they're alone, Xena tells the alleged father that if he's going to be a part of her life again, he should know that she's done horrible things in the past. Mm-hmm. And the alleged father answers that it's all good. It's fine. And nothing to be ashamed of even, since the past is what has made Xena the great woman that she is today.
Yeah, and Xena has this little relieved smile on her face. Lucy's acting really is very, very, very strong. As always, I guess, but I think it's just everything else is lacking in this episode. So Lucy's acting is the saving grace here in a lot of scenes.
Yeah, yeah. So a bit later, Xena and the alleged father ambush a small group of baddies that was clearly following them. And Xena uses her signature enhanced interrogation technique on one of them to find out that the rest of the baddies are heading down to the town that they kidnapped the women from. And she tells the alleged father that she needs to go deal with that and that she would go alone without him. But he protests, saying that for some reason, he owes it to the people of that town. And he literally says that it's hard to explain. And Xena just accepts that and lets him go with her.
No time to explain. Let's run. I mean, Xena has her own things in the past that are hard to explain. So I guess that's why she lets it go. But at this point of the story, we see that alleged dad is flaky at best.
Yeah. So the women finally get back to their town and they're greeted warmly. And Rhea also is welcomed very warmly. There's no shame that she was afraid of. So she thanks Gabrielle for convincing her to come back.
Yeah. I wanted to just add that there is another brief scene of Ares talking to the main baddie. The villain explains to Ares how he's going to kill Xena in this way, and then kill Xena in that way, and then kill Xena again. And Ares is like, haha, you're all talk, no action. The only redeeming quality about the scene is that when the villain leaves, unblocking Ares' view to the mirror, Ares checks himself out in the mirror, traces his little goatee like a douchebag. I kind of love it.
It is cute. Like, Ares is having the best time this episode.
Yeah.
And I think, Lucy Lawless's acting and Kevin Smith's acting are the two best things about this episode, hands down.
Definitely.
Shortly after, Xena and the alleged father get to the town, and Xena starts warning the elders that there is danger coming. But they notice the alleged father, and they're like, oh, it's him! Arrest him! They say that he once pretended to be an ally, and then he attacked with his army. Xena whips out her sword, ready to defend the guy. But he tells her that it's all true, and he did do those things. Mm-hmm. And then Xena tells the elders that he's changed, and he wants to help them now. How does she know?
Yeah.
She doesn't even know when it was that he did those things. Like, what if it was last week?
It could have been.
It's just so random. And Xena then asks whether the elders will let the alleged father go if she stops the villain's army. And the main elder is like, LOL, what? How the fuck will you stop an army alone? To which Xena replies, watch me. I have many skills.
Which is always nice to hear.
Yeah, but like here it feels kind of forced.
It does. But also, again, since there's nothing to say about the plot, I'll talk about Lucy's acting. It is exceptional in this scene again because she has that little crazy twinkle in her eye that appears every time before Xena's about to be unhinged. Like, we know what it's like. And we see that coming here. And again, I think that, like, this is so random. And everything is happening so fast. And the writing is so lazy. But because Lucy is trying to kind of save the episode, she's trying to set up the things that are going to come.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I don't know whether it saved the episode altogether.
No, it didn't. So Xena rides out to the villain and his... They keep saying army. Army is a very strong word. It looks more like 20 people.
I mean, they have uniforms. That gotta count for something, right?
It's just... Like, just don't say army. Yeah, so like Xena approaches the villain, tells him that she wants him to leave the town alone. And the villain is like, well, throw down your sword and we'll talk.
Mm-hmm.
And Xena's like, you first. And he does that. So she follows suit. Then the villain's like, haha, this is going to be easier than I thought. And throws a dagger at her. And that arrow catching workshop must have been so extensive because it covered arrows, it covered darts, it covered daggers too because she catches it and very easily.
Yep.
And then she tells the villain that she's going to defeat him and take his army and like, take it and do what?
I don't know. I think that's what the crazy twinkle in her eyes was for, but yeah, it's very sudden and random.
It's so random. Anyway, Xena and the villain fight, and obviously she defeats him, but actually she doesn't kill him. She just knocks him out. Still, she then tells the quote-unquote army that she's the new commander, and they're like, okay, awesome! Hail Xena! Hail Xena! And one of them asks whether they should go and attack the town now, but she says no. They're gonna do it her way. And tells everyone to follow her, which they do.
Yeah, it was surprisingly easy to take over this army. They haven't even discussed the salaries and the benefits.
Yeah, and we then see the, like, some moments later, the villain regains his consciousness. And again, Ares appears and tells the villain that he did exactly what he needed to. And that's when the villain realizes that he was used. Mm-hmm. And Ares is like, yeah, I did use you, actually. Super grateful, thanks! but the villain tells Ares that Xena will never be his. But Ares is feeling confident, saying that this time he holds all the cards.
Good for him. Yeah, continuing with my little gay agent talent story. Ares holds his hand to the villain's face for a moment as he's speaking with him, and it's quite a tender gesture. So aww. Either there was something going on the fainting couch, or Ares... or Ares just got touchy-feely because he's so excited that he's going to have Xena back. Or he thinks that, at least.
Right. So Xena and her quote-unquote army then ride up to the town, and she sees the alleged father kind of semi-unconscious, tied to some wooden arch and clearly beaten up very badly. And immediately she's like, take the village! Okay? So much for doing it her way. What was that even supposed to be like? Like, what was the original plan? Yeah. I understand that she has this old habit to tap into, but it's so sudden it doesn't make sense to me. It just seems like they suddenly switch to evil Xena, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's all the explanation.
That's true. Like, as I said, Lucy's trying to set this up, and it could have been an interesting plot of her reverting to her old ways. But something major should have happened, not like a bunch of villagers beating up a dude she just met this morning who's claiming to be her dad. Like, even if she believes him at this point, it's not enough for this sudden change.
Yeah. So her army does take the village, and they capture everyone, including Gabrielle, who, in her signature fashion, keeps thinking that it's all a misunderstanding. Xena cuts the ropes holding up her alleged father and takes him into her arms. He's like fully unconscious at that point, and she kind of carries him in her arms.
Yeah, it's a pretty dark scene. Like, it's even darker because it's almost silent, I think. Like, there's very little music. But I kept thinking how strong Xena should be to fully carry a grown man, even an older one.
Yeah. I also had that thought. I was like,
cool. Damn, she's strong.
Yeah. Like, I wonder how they did it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So Xena then carries him towards the captured villagers and asks them, who did this to my father? Mm-hmm. So at this point, like, all doubts are gone. Definitely her father. She loves him forever, etc. the main elder says that the guy brought this on himself because he tried to escape. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know how good a justification that is actually for beating someone to death. But at that point, the alleged father moans and Xena puts him onto the ground and he says that he's dying. And then he dies.
Yeah, it turned into dark comedy at this point.
And it's just like protracted, it's like...
It's a very
theatrical
death.
So at that point, Xena fully loses her shit and she just yells, "Kill them all!"
Sure. And
miraculously, Gabrielle manages to punch the soldier that's holding her and she escapes from his grip and grabs some sort of a staff. She runs up to Xena, who is clearly so blinded with rage that it takes her a moment to even realize who she's looking at. Mm-hmm. Gabrielle tells her to stop and refuses to step away. Xena kind of swats her away, but Gabrielle manages to hit Xena on her head with the staff. Mm-hmm. And that is thankfully enough to kind of knock the madness out of Xena.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a very moving scene between those two, but it's done in slow motion. It's very funny at this point because we see like Gabrielle's eyes widen in slow motion.
Yeah.
It's something, and it's a choice.
It is a choice, for sure. So the alleged father then moans again, which is a surprise. Like, he fully... died a moment ago, but Xena runs up to him and she tells him it's all over.
Yeah, he's like, oh, surprise, I'm not dead. So I guess continuing with the theatrical death, he's like, oh, I still have a part of my monologue.
Yes.
Where was I?
Yeah. And his monologue is, what the fuck? Where's your anger, girl? Kill them all. Don't you want to fight for me? And at this point, things click for Xena, and she's like, Ares? Mm-hmm. And the alleged father indeed, like, morphs into Ares.
Yeah. I remember watching this for the first time and being kind of quite impressed with this plot twist. I think it's, I don't really like this episode, but this is a cool thing.
Yeah.
And again, how they set this up also is a cool thing, like this Ares daddy transformation, because when we think about the past scenes with her father, they're choreographed in a way that we can see that it could be Ares, like first with the manipulations that he always uses, and even like how they're standing at some point, Xena is standing in front and he's behind her and he's like puts his hand on her shoulders. That also is something that he has done before.
True.
Those are nice kind of payoffs. I just wish they had that attention to detail with other parts of this episode.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, I remember when I first rewatched that episode, I completely forgot that it was Ares, and I was like, oh my god!
Yeah.
And then Ares kind of tells Xena that he just wants to be her daddy.
This is going to continue in other episodes too, by the way.
Yeah. He's like, but what do daddies do? The same thing that I've been doing for you. Like, come on, let's do it.
Like, I've been sending money to your cart for you to buy shoes. I've been buying you dinners. I want to be a daddy.
Yeah. But Xena's just not feeling it. They fight briefly, and Ares is clearly stronger. So he tells Xena that she must either join him or die. And she's like, I guess I'll die then.
Yeah. I mean, he's literally a god, so that makes sense.
Like... Yeah, yeah. But Ares can't bring himself to kill her, and he just disappears.
He's almost crying when he disappears, too.
I know! I feel so bad for him!
He's like, he does this thing with his nose, he's like...
Yeah! It's really sweet.
Ares is very much a baby girl in this episode.
He is the baby girl of the episode, yeah. So, at that point, of course, immediately, all is forgiven. Everyone just rejoices. Because, like, Xenon literally did the same thing that they almost killed the alleged father for. Okay!
I mean, I think at this point the villagers are like, just get the fuck out, everyone! We just want to live in peace. Go and take your quote-unquote army with you.
Yeah.
By the way, we don't know where quote-unquote army went.
That's
true. Like, they just disappear.
Yeah. Huh. So, sometime later, Xena and Gabrielle are getting ready to leave the village. And Xena walks up to Gabrielle, and instead of apologizing, which, like, this is the point where you apologize, girl.
Yeah.
She basically confesses her love for Gabrielle, saying that their friendship mm-hmm. binds them more than blood ever could. Mm-hmm. And Gabrielle says that she feels the same. And I remember you mentioning that there was like this moment where you realized that they love each other. What was mm-hmm. it this moment that you were referring to?
No, sad. I think that the moment that I'm referring to is in season 2.
Okay.
But yeah, I'll let you know when it comes.
Okay.
But yeah, I agree that that is a very important moment, although it's very hard for me to kind of recognize its significance because the overall lack of substance and true feeling in this episode, it's so rushed that even this yeah. moment kind of seems not really working.
Yeah, that's true. And they walk away and that concludes the episode. And the fun credits say... No fathers, spiritual or biological, were harmed during the production of this motion picture.
Good.
So, what was the gayest moment of this episode for you?
I think, since I'm fascinated by this headcanon, I'm going to stick with Ares, the villain, the sidekick, and the fainting couch. I like that dynamic. It amused me.
Cute. I like that. It would be fantastic fanfic material for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure yeah. there is something like that. Like, I'm sure there are thousands of fanfics with Ares and maybe...
Oh, yeah. Duh.
Something like that, too.
I'm going to stick with the Xena Gabrielle romance here and mm-hmm. pick the love confession at the end, even though yeah I agree it felt not as well done as it could have been, but mm-hmm. that was pretty gay.
Yeah, that's true.
And how many chakrams out of 10 would you give this episode?
I would say a 4, because the twist is interesting because of Lucy's acting and because of baby girl Ares. Those things earn 4 points, but no more.
Yeah, I was literally going to say 4 myself. This marks the 5th episode in a row where we have matching scores. It's starting to freak me out, to be honest.
Yeah, but yeah, it's not the best, but
no.
I mean, it was entertaining to watch, mainly because of Ares for me.
And hopefully the next episode will be even more entertaining mm-hmm. to watch and to discuss. It's going to be called The Greater Good.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see you then. And up until that point, If you want, you can follow us on Instagram at Zena Made Me Gay. If you want to leave us a good review, would super appreciate that as well.
Oh yeah.
On whatever podcast platform you're listening to us right now. And I need to say
that's
something
it.
Else, and I don't know what. Yes.
And that's it. And talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.